This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Millions of children who can't sit still in class and can't focus on their work are getting diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. An estimated 75% of those children are treated with the drug methylphenidate, best known by its brand name Ritalin. A new documentary asks the questions, is ADD a largely man-made epidemic, and are we misdiagnosing and unnecessarily medicating hundreds and thousands of children? My guest John Merrow is the executive producer and host of the documentary, which will be shown on public television as part of his series, The Merrow Report. The program will first be shown this Friday, but broadcast times will vary from city to city. Merrow formerly hosted the NPR series Options in Education and was the education correspondent for the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour. Well, let's start with the basics. What is attention deficit disorder, or ADD?
Attention deficit disorder, it can only be defined by observation. There's no medical test for it. And there are about 17 different criteria. Is excessively fidgety, wants to leave his seat. They're very, very subjective. Basically, it is in the eye of the beholder, although the beholder is supposed to be a trained observer.
The drug treatment given now for children who are diagnosed with ADD is Ritalin. The generic name is methylphenidate.
Yeah.
What kind of drug is this? What family of pharmaceuticals does it fall into?
Well, it's a psychostimulant. The DEA, the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration, classifies it as Schedule II in the same classification as morphine and codeine. It's so that it's something to keep an eye on. You can't just walk in and get it. It's a prescription drug, and to have a prescription renewed, the physician is supposed to check the patient out. Couple of other medications used, Dexedrine, Sylert, those are also prescribed. But in most cases, it is Ritalin or methylphenidate. And in most ADD diagnoses, medication is used. I mean, they like to say, well, don't just use pills, skills, not pills. But in fact, it's almost always pills.
I think you say about 75% of the time, children who are diagnosed with ADD are given medication.
And it starts early, by the way. I mean, we met kids in first grade, second grade. I mean, that's astounding. I met some 14-year-olds who've been on it since first grade.
You spoke to some parents for a documentary, and several of the parents expressed their concern that they weren't really sure what to do. They weren't, anxious to give their children drugs. On the other hand, they felt that their children were having serious problems that were going to, that these problems could really hurt the kids in later years. If the kids weren't learning, what kind of future were they going to have? Would you elaborate for us on the dilemma that parents face when their child is diagnosed as having ADD?
It probably occurs before the diagnosis, Terry. I think the dilemma, I remember vividly a parent in Missouri who said, we tried to get the schools to change. The schools were so rigid. We tried to get the schools to change, but we couldn't. So we had to give our kid the medication. I mean, that's a terrible position for a parent to be in. A parent in Florida said a similar kind of thing, that you have to go along. You have to get along. Ideally, the school would be small and flexible, and this kind of behavior wouldn't be a problem. And parents were aware that there's something a little bit fishy about a disease that seems to only strike kids when they're in school. And also, by the way, almost exclusively affects white middle-class boys. There's something not quite right in there. But by the same token, the diagnosis of ADD comes clothed in sort of very impressive trappings. And so when all the authority of the school and the medical community comes and says, well, this is what's wrong, and you really, it's not an entirely uncomfortable diagnosis for some parents. And ADD, in many ways, ADD is a perfect handicap because it tells the parent, well, it's not really your fault, sir, father, mother, because it's genetic. It's in the kid. And for the school, it's a perfect handicap because it's not expensive. An ADD kid could have a special plan under handicap law, but usually they don't. usually what happens is they get medicated. The parents pay for the medication instead of having smaller classes, private tutors, whatever some handicapped kids get. So it's a good handicap for the school, too. They medicate some kids. Certainly, it's a good handicap for a drug company that sells this stuff at $30 a month per prescription to a million kids. That's a lot of money. So it's a dilemma for parents. And when a group comes along and says, it's not your fault, it's in your kid's head, it's crossed wires in the brain, we can solve it. That's a very seductive message.
Were the parents who you spoke with satisfied by the results? The results of the drug?
Yes. They, for the most part, said, this seems to work. The family that we focus on in the documentary, they represent really what many families said. Yes, it's made a difference. And for the most part, the young kids were satisfied. The young kids accepted it. You see the younger ones, you know, age 7, 8, 9, saying, I know I have to take this. My parents told me I had to. It's the older kids where you see the real fruits of this.
You actually interviewed several older kids who had taken or were taking drugs for attention deficit disorder, and you asked them about the effects it had on them. Why don't we hear an excerpt of those interviews?
Let's say I'm reading, like, some dumb book that I have to for, like, language arts or whatever, I can't focus on it. That's why when I take my pills, I take Ritalin, and that helps me focus on that, and that's more better with me.
I could tell the difference when I take my Ritalin. Some days I'll go to school, I won't take it. I won't be able to concentrate on my works. Somebody will start talking, two people have a conversation in back of me, I'll start paying attention to their conversation and not do my work. Sit there, I'll start playing with my pen or thumping my foot or doing something, but when I do take it, it's like I could block everything out and I could concentrate.
But Ritalin has other effects.
Sometimes when I sit still for a long time, my head just like starts going like that and I feel dizzy. So I feel dizzy, sometimes I feel kind of weird in my stomach. It has lots of side effects for me.
I can't sleep. I mean, I barely get like 5 hours of sleep a night.
It always makes me all, like, I don't know how to say it, like anger, like, and like I just want to like be alone and stuff.
It makes me lose my appetite. I like don't even want to eat.
And everything everyone else says is true. Like, I think they should have come out. They should research that pill, and, like, make it better, you know.
That's an excerpt of John Merrow's investigative documentary on attention deficit disorder that will be premiered Friday evening on PBS and shown on many stations over the course of the next few days as part of the John Merrow Report. Now, some of the kids who you interviewed told you that they begged their parents to not take the drugs. What did they tell you?
That was so powerful. And when kids said that, I say, please don't make me take it. And they would talk about what are these side effects. The side effects, which include, as you mentioned, insomnia, irritability, loss of appetite, facial tics. And parents are, for the most part, loving and caring. I mean, the mother who is in the documentary talked about how she said, okay, you don't have to take it on the weekend. Now, that's a young boy who says, I know I need to take it in school. I know I need to. Now, who knows what he'll be saying in a couple years. But I think it's tough for a parent when the school says, you know, we do tend to trust our schools, and they say, your kid is out of control.
Yeah. Your investigative documentary really focuses in part on the question, is ADD a real disorder, or are we medicating kids so that they'll just behave well and pay attention, even though they may be bored? I'm going to ask you to make the argument on each side.
Well, certainly people say that it's a real disorder. There are doctors whom I respect who say, yes, there is a genuine problem and the medication and a specific targeted program can help that problem. Dr. Karen Hine, who's a nationally known pediatrician who's head of the Institute of Medicine, makes the case that there is sometimes a need. And I have utmost respect for her, and so I accept that. And I've also heard from friends who have children, and, you know, they've explained to me. So I don't believe our program is saying that it's a total sham. I mean, there are people making the case that it's very real. On the other hand, you mentioned boring classes. That's certainly an issue. You get smart kids, who are bored. Well, they start messing around and somebody sticks that label on them. That's an easier thing to do than to make the class interesting or to have the parents pay a little more attention to the child. So, I mean, I think there's a very strong case to be made that we clearly are overdiagnosing.
My guest is John Merrow. His investigative documentary on ADD will be shown on PBS. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with John Merrow, the host and executive producer of a new public TV documentary on attention deficit disorder. Now, one of the things you uncovered in your documentary is that the largest self-help group for parents of children with ADD is funded in part by one of the major pharmaceutical companies that manufactures a drug that's given to children who have ADD. Why is this problematic? What potential conflict of interest does it pose, do you think, if a pharmaceutical company funds in part the work of a self-help group?
Well, there might not even be a problem if it were done openly. If it were clearly stated throughout that we get 20% of our money from the company that makes a medication that we recommend, that was not the case. I mean, the only people who would have known about the funding of the Ciba Geigy giving money to this group called CHAD, Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Disorder, would be people who went to the annual meeting and saw the small print, thanks to Ciba Geigy. Ciba Geigy gave money to CHAD to do a PSA, which has been, according to CHAD, seen by 17 million people.
It's a public service announcement,
yes. Well, Ciba Geigy paid for that. Ciba Geigy's name ought to be on it, but the only name on there is CHAD with an 800 number. The Ciba Geigy spokesman, I suspect inadvertently, described CHAD as a conduit, and that's what it turns out to be.
Is your concern that the self-help group might be recommending drugs more often than they otherwise would because they get money from a pharmaceutical company?
Well, I think people watching the documentary will draw their own conclusions about that. But what we did was we looked very carefully at what CHAD tells parents about ADD. And what they say is not always accurate. Now, parents, all the parents we talked to who knew CHAD trusted CHAD. They were shocked, A, to discover the money, and then B, to when we started saying, well, CHAD says this, but the facts are otherwise. And we lay out a certain amount of that in the documentary itself. The most egregious statement CHAD makes has to do with ADD itself. They say ADD is a neurobiological disorder. They have a big poster in their office. It's a neurobiological thing. Well, there's just no hard evidence to that fact. Now, that allows parents to get off the hook in a way, or to obscure what might really be going on. And you say it's a neurobiological disorder. It's a terrible thing to say to a kid also.
Do pharmaceutical companies often contribute to patient self-help groups?
Yes, sure. But Ciba Geigy publishes a list of its funding, and the list that we obtained, they say that their average grant is $5,000. Well, they've given CHAD over $900,000 plus countless thousands of dollars in in-kind contributions in running meetings. So Ciba Geigy has not exactly been forthcoming about this either.
Now, one of the things underway now, there's a petition to take methylphenidrate, which is the generic drug used for ADD, to take that off the list of controlled substances. What does it mean when you're a controlled substance?
It means that it's a little harder to get. It recognizes that it's a dangerous, potentially addictive substance. And in the case of methylphenidate, it means that you have to, if you have a prescription for it, you have to go back and see the doctor to have that prescription refilled. If you remove it from Schedule 2, you wouldn't have to do that, be able to phone in. And it would also allow the quota. It's under a quota now on how much can be produced. And the quota has been going up every year. But if you take it off that, then there'd be even more methylphenidate. Now, the argument that CHAD and others have made is that we don't want any shortages. We need this. I think it's based on what the kids have said about these side effects and doctors. Doctors say, no, keep it on Schedule 2 because they know how available the drug is. By the way, the lobbying campaign is intense. And those who watch the documentary, you'll see that the story hasn't, the decision hasn't been made yet. But the head of the DEA, the man in the DEA has to make this decision, has received letters from nearly 150 senators and representatives, all saying, supporting the Chad position, say, please remove it. I mean, a very, very intense lobbying campaign. And one hopes that those senators and congressmen, representatives, don't know what they're doing when they ask that. You know, I mean, that clearly should not be taken off Schedule 2.
What does the DEA have to say about keeping the drug on the list of controlled substances?
Well, I have no idea how the DEA will make its decision. The man at the DEA who's in the documentary expressed some shock when he discovered that Chad and Siba Geigy had this close financial connection. It's Chad that is bringing the petition. Now, there's another group has co-signed the petition, but Chad, which is the recipient of the Siba Geigy money, Chad is paying all the legal bills. They've hired a high-powered law firm in Washington to do the lobbying.
Where do the pharmaceutical companies stand on the issue of whether methylphenidate, which is the generic drug, should be removed from the list of controlled substances?
As far as I could learn from Siba Geigy, they're not taking a position on it. That's the best information I have.
Before hyperactivity was diagnosed as ADD and before there were drugs that were prescribed for children with ADD, what was done in the schools if a kid was fidgeting or getting up out of his seat all day or not paying attention, unable to perform?
I guess kids were just punished. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, we had a guy in my class. I can still see him. He would turn his chair around, and this was in sixth grade, and he would ride. He said, I'm riding my horse, and he would just ride around. Well, of course, after a while, the teacher would throw him out of class.
I think he was in my class, too.
Maybe some worse things. I mean, maybe a kid that was corporal punishment, maybe would beat the kids. You know, we aren't always the most child-centered society. I'm not saying we need to hearken back to the good old days. I'm saying we ought to be looking forward and saying, look, these kids swim in a sea of information outside the schools. I mean, they just swim in a sea of information. And then they walk into this arid school. Now, some schools are changing, but not fast enough. I mean, that's one of the things we need to do is make the school a more interesting place to be. But we also need to slow down a little and spend more time with our kids. But I think we need to stop giving them drugs, telling them something's wrong with their heads, and then giving them drugs.
Let me say, it seems to me that even a parent who might be very skeptical about medicating their child for ADD is in quite a bind, because if their alternative is skeptically medicating a child or just letting their child go to school day after day and not get anything from it because they're fidgeting and jumping around in their chair all day, well, you know, not getting an education, going through the motions but not getting an education isn't a very good alternative
either.
That is
true. You're absolutely correct. And that is the choice that parents saw themselves as having. And maybe there's a third choice. It's to get involved together to go to the schools and say, hey,
we see. But that's something long term, you know. That's something that might have a payoff for somebody else's kids who aren't born yet. But what are the odds that's going to have a payoff for your kid who's already in junior high school? Reform does not happen very quickly.
I think you have to start with the teacher itself. I don't think you try and reform the whole system. But I would say, no, you can't say, well, you don't do it because it will only work 5 years from now. I think you start with that teacher right away and with some other parents and say, what can we do to be involved to make this curriculum more interesting? I mean, I think you have to assume you can do stuff. There are terrific curricula out there. You say, I can't accept those two alternatives, doing nothing or giving my kid drugs. Say, I'm going to get involved.
Do we have any evidence that a kid who's diagnosed as ADD would behave better and concentrate better and learn more if a class was really interesting?
Well, I have all the same anecdotal evidence that the people who say, you know, the other side. No, I don't think there's any long-term studies to that effect. It's a common sense observation that if you make the school interesting, the kids certainly say that. The kids say time and again, I can concentrate if I'm interested. Even the parents who medicate their kids say, little Danny really loves dinosaurs, anything to do with dinosaurs, and he's all over it, and he's just locks into dinosaurs for hours at end. Well, if you can tell that to the teachers and create conditions so the teachers can have some flexibility and will be able to say, okay, well, the dinosaur group over here, you can study math with dinosaurs. You can study all kinds of stuff where you can write about dinosaurs and learn English using dinosaurs. I mean, the answers are there.
But that's really putting a lot of pressure on a teacher to come up with a curriculum that takes everybody's obsession into account.
Well, so take away the chance of giving the kid drugs. Take away that as an option. We're not going to have classes where 10% of the kids are being medicated. You say that is unacceptable. And then say find some acceptable solutions. You can't beat the kids either. So find some acceptable solutions. And I'm saying there are exciting curricula out there. Teachers don't like to do a lousy job.
But you're saying we're not really sure that a kid who's diagnosed with ADD is going to respond better.
I know, but how about 99% of the time the kids will? The kids like to learn. Have you ever met a kid who didn't want to get involved? A young kid who didn't want to read? An older kid who didn't want to master stuff? I mean, it's just like anything you do. You like to be good at it. Give kids an opportunity to be good at it. Give kids an opportunity to get into something they already care about and use that so that they learn other stuff at the same time. Sneak it in there. I mean, that works. You can see all kinds of examples of that. I mean, the answers are there. You say, we're taking away the drug option. Tell you, that is not a choice. That is not an acceptable solution to a problem of kids who can't seem to pay attention to the stuff you're trying to give them in school. I mean, if that's too radical, then I can't imagine that's too radical. I could show you good curricula all over the place. That's a matter of will and time. I mean, it's a simple solution. It may not be easy, but it's certainly simple.
Well, John Merrow, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you, Terry. It's a pleasure.
John Merrow is the host and executive producer of the documentary Attention Deficit Disorder, A Dubious Diagnosis. It will be shown on public television beginning Friday. Broadcast times will vary from city to city. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.